What's up and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. This is your host, Jonathan Gellner, and thank you so much for joining us today. Today's podcast is sponsored by New Era. New Era is the official headwear provider of the MLB, NFL, and NBA. If you love to rock New Era caps as much as I do, then you don't want to miss this opportunity to wear what the players wear and get 15% off. Go to neweracap.com/AOTC and use the code AOTC, all lowercase, at checkout. That's 15% off your order using promo code AOTC. On today's show, we have leadership coach and consultant, author of The Culture System, and host of the Coaching Culture Podcast, JP Nerva. JP is a world-renowned leadership coach and sports consultant and the visionary founder of TOC, a leading global sports consulting and coaching business. With an accomplished career as a professional basketball coach spanning over a decade, JP has solidified his expertise in team culture, drawing from his extensive background and knowledge. He is also the founder and co-host of the highly acclaimed sports leadership podcast, Coaching Culture. In 2019, JP published his debut book, Calling Up, Discovering Your Journey to Transformational Leadership. And in 2022, he followed up with The Culture System, a proven process for creating an extraordinary team culture. So on the show, we discuss his passion, which is coaching coaches, which includes assistants and head coaches at all levels and all sports. We also go through his ideas on how to build systems within our programs. We go over leadership councils, competitive cauldrons, and his advice on parents, and much, much more. Here is JP Nerbun. JP, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jonathan. Appreciate the opportunity to be here, man.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I for those listening to the show, you are currently located in Ireland, but I don't hear much of an Irish accent. I guess that hasn't sunk in yet.
10 years here. Probably turns up a little bit when I've had a few pints of Guinness, but for normally not so bad.
That's good. No, I really like that. So I do have a question for you, though, because you coached in the States and now you're in Ireland. Was there ever moments that there was, even though we speak the same language, was there ever moments that there were things that were lost in translation?
That's a great question. You know, funny story is early on, there was some funny moments. There was this moment, I remember, like, I'm in the country for like the first 2 days I'm here, and, you know, I had gone out the night before. I was in college at the time, and this girl who was my housemate or roommates type of thing in college, she passes me, and she's Irish, and she says, "How was the crack last night?" And I said, "The crack? I don't know what you're talking about." Well, crack is C-R-A-I-C in Irish. It's a phrase that's just about having fun. You know, did you have a good time last night? So I was like, oh, and then she explained that to me. So that's lost in translation. But you know, the funny, real funny thing is, besides, you know, silly little phrases like that, that are different in the language there, the cultural, it's very different. And so when I started coaching years and years into my time being here, you know, my charismatic American fiery speeches type of mentality, you know, the Irish are very sarcastic and, you know, they don't really take to that. So I really adopted when I was coaching in Ireland for, you know, 5 years to that. And then I came back to the States. I started coaching, you know, high school basketball in the States. And, you know, people did not appreciate my cynicism and I had taken on too much of this Irish mentality and I wasn't giving fiery speeches. And, you know, I think they wanted a little bit more of my enthusiasm. So yeah, the cultural differences can sometimes be a bit of a challenge for those types of shifts.
No, oh, I love that. So, you started where I was going to go anyways, but let's talk a little bit about, you know, your background info. And I really encourage all of our guests to listen to your show because it doesn't really, you know, you're basketball by trade, but you are more into coaching coaches no matter the sport. And so I listen to your podcast every week and, you know, it's something that it comes out on Sundays and I usually do it when I'm mowing, but right now it's, you know, 31 degrees here in October and it's going to be like 90 degrees here, next week. And so that's Oklahoma weather for you. But anyway, so yeah, let's do you on Sundays. But for our listeners who may not know who you are, give us a little bit about your background, you know, your background in coaching and how you decided to get into coaching other coaches as well.
Yeah. I mean, I'll try to give a brief one here. So, you know, basketball was my sport. I wasn't much of a baseball player growing up. played at the University of South Carolina. And then I made a little pivot and a change in my life where I moved to Ireland and I was finishing out my degree there in physical education and teaching there. And that's where I kind of got my start in coaching. And it was coaching basketball. And, instantly, everyone's like, oh, you play Division I in the States and you're American. So, within a few months of coaching, I was coaching like 5 or 6 different teams. At the age of 21, they threw me into coaching a pro team over there. They had fired their Serbian coach and they needed somebody that would do it for cheap, and they got me to do it. So I had this really wild, experience where, in the span of a year, I'd actually coach like 5 or 6 teams, because most teams might run for 9 months, but they might only practice like 2-3 times a week. And so I just started coaching a ton. So I did that for 5 years, coached a little bit in Lithuania, had some camps, and then I moved to the States and coached for another 5 years before I kind of made this pivot. And the pivot came about because of just the cultural challenges that I faced, within my team culture struggling. And long story short, I got to this point where I had done every character curriculum, book study. I'd hear an idea or go attend a clinic. I'm like, okay, we're going to try this to get our culture right. I could just never, it never seemed to like really last, and it was just, culture was a constant struggle. And so I went out and hired a mentor coach to work with me on my leadership and my culture. And when I found that process was, I had to first focus on some changes I needed to make as a leader that were making me ineffective at times. So first changes were made in myself. And then I started to build out a system, just for more consistency throughout the year to consistently be working in an upstream way to address the culture. And so that work with that mentor inspired me to start writing about my experience as I was reading, like a book a week on leadership and culture and psychology and all these things. And I started blogging, and then that blog led to a podcast to share one of my ideas and interview some of the sharpest people out there in leadership and psychology and culture. And then that podcast led to people wanting to have conversations with me. And then, did that for a few years and, did a bit of speaking and working and writing and having kind of like a mentorship role with coaches, but I wanted to get better at that. And so then eventually I went on and got my executive leadership coaching certification so that I could, improve my support and my work with coaches, so it could be more effective coach for coaches. And so, yeah, that's what I've been doing the last 7 years now.
No, I love that. And, like I said, I listened to you quite a bit, and especially because last year was my first year as a head coach. And I can't remember who said it, but about, the last couple of weeks I heard it on a podcast. It's like being a new head coach is almost like being a new parent. There's so much that you can read about and you can think that you're prepared, but until you actually do it, you're not ready. Right. And so it's one of those interesting things of like, okay, like I thought that I was ready. I had great experiences, over a decade under some awesome, awesome Hall of Fame head coaches. And so then I jump in here and there was like, okay, there's a lot more to this than I thought. So with that, there's a lot of, coaches that are going through that right now, and they're probably in their first couple of months of being a new head coach, or maybe they're transitioning into different programs and, restarting. So I'd like to hear, what's your advice and kind of what do you go through with the guys that you mentor of their first couple of months on the job, on a new job?
Great question. I love that. And that metaphor of, being like a parent, it's probably the same too in parenting. I remember I've got, 4 older sisters and they had a lot of kids, and I used to, not give too much advice to them, but I might be thinking, oh, geez, that doesn't make sense why they'd parent that way. Or, I would be very critical. I think sometimes that's the life of an assistant coach is like, we're loyal, we appreciate it, but we're like, I would never do it that way. And then you get into it and you're like, oh yeah, I understand why coach maybe did it this way. Or I understood I understand now like why they get really emotional in these moments when I'm like, what are they getting so upset about? So that's a really great metaphor. I appreciate that. Getting on the job new. I mean, I think one of the first things that most coaches don't do a good job of, most leaders don't do a good job of, is just some inner reflection around like what's important to you. Like we so oftentimes we hear this football coach or this baseball coach or this, we read this leadership book and we're like, oh, I love those core values or this, like for me, it was John Wooden. I read every John Wooden book. He had his Pyramid of Success. And I was like, I'm going to use the Pyramid of Success as my roadmap, to building a great team, a great culture. And, you know, I never sat back and said, like, okay, who am I? What's important to me? What's my personality? How do I want to coach? You know, how do I want it to feel for my players when they show up? You know, those are really important questions, you know, like otherwise, if I don't do that reflection, we kind of just go in and without any intentionality, just hope the experience is positive, right? We don't ever really think about like what we want them to feel. And, you know, it's the same with like, how do we coach? Well, if I don't really reflect on how do I want to coach, and, you know, I often will just coach the way that I was coached, and for better or worse, right? And sometimes we pick up good things from our previous coaches, and a lot of times we pick up some negative, you know, behaviors. And so having some time to reflect on whether it's a mission statement and some core values or a purpose statement, or, you know, just for me also just identifying what are the things I need to do to A, stay centered so I can be emotionally regulated, you know, for my athletes in games, handle the stress and pressure of the job, as well as continuously invest and grow myself, right? So what are those disciplines that are going to line up with my values as well? So yeah, really understanding what those values look like as far as when they're illustrated with our behaviors. How do we operate? How do we act as a coach, right? I don't think many people sit there and say, yeah, you know, I think right. I want to use fear as my great motivator. Like, but yet we sure. use fear as oftentimes our way to motivate our players to work hard and do the things we want them to do. And so we need that intentional reflection piece first, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's one thing I wrote down about you, like getting to hear you speak and on podcasts and just now, you're a very self-reflective person. Now, like for guys who aren't and kind of shoot from the hip, I mean, I've tried to be better at this too, but there's like, I have two little kids and I'm waking up trying to fit everything in. And so if I don't do it in the morning, it really doesn't get done. So mm-hmm. what are some different ways or advice that you've given to coaches who are like, man, I don't have like 30 minutes to meditate in the morning, or I don't have like an hour to work out. And I, you know, I've got the same things that we all have that we just keep adding to our day. What are some different ways that you can help us be better at, you know, bettering our behaviors, or just different advice that you've got? And as far as like people who are hearing that and we're like, yeah, I'd love to be able to do that, JP, but I don't have time for it. I make mm-hmm. time for what's important to you. But what are some different ways that you found that you've helped people be successful in those things?
Yeah, I'll give you kind of like a big, you know, laundry list of stuff here. I mean, you could just try to pick a time of the year that you can sit back and maybe even just spend a day or just kind of reflect on how things went, you know. So just creating that space, go to a coach's retreat, try to go outside of the usual X's and O's, you know, technical type clinics, go to one of those, hearing some speakers, reflecting on those types of things. So just creating space within the year. And then you should break mm-hmm. that down with other ways of reflection. Okay, so it could be 5 minutes in the morning, 5 minutes in the evening, some sort of journaling. We do have a lot of coaches do that. I think other people, they grow more through conversations. And so it's, can you, for me at a period of my growth, it was, yeah, I went to someone outside of our school. I went and hired a mentor coach and did some group mentoring, had the school help me pay for that. That was really profound. But also, you know, what was really profound was I found another coach in the building that he was just as committed to, you know, a transformational leadership approach and building a culture and impacting the kids' lives. And we'd have lunch once a week and we'd talk about what was going on for us, what was struggling. And he provided a sounding board and perspective as well too. So can you find other people with shared values, shared missions, you know, in coaching that you can have these conversations with? I think the other thing is trying to find ways to not just saturate yourself or marinate yourself in new ideas, like culture building ideas or new things you need to do as a leader, you know, meditate on your head or whatever it is, like these types of things that everyone's constantly pushing that we need to do as leaders, you know, that are good, beneficial. Those things are good, but I think like marinating ourselves in content, whether it's a podcast or a books that help us to kind of shape our mindset, right? So you know, our thinking drives our feelings drive our behaviors, our behaviors drive our results, right? So a lot of times if I want to, say, like for me, oh my God, my big struggle was I'd had temper and I would lose my temper and I would yell at the team as a way to motivate them or put them in a line because I'd become sure. frustrated. So I just started to read or listen to books or podcasts that really supported the type of, you know, behaviors and mindsets and the changes that I wanted to see in myself, right? So, you know, by constantly learning, yeah, some new methods, but also just hearing leaders that did it differently, you know, like a Tony Dungy type of thing or John Wooden, right? other coaches out there and hearing these coaches or these leaders or these people that are constantly reinforcing the type of person that I want to become, the leader I want to become, that stuff helps me to reframe my mindset. And remember, mindset drives behaviors, behaviors drive results. So, you know, some of that educational content can be really valuable. And so that's, you know, that, what are we substituting? You know, can we skip one TV show or can we cut back on our film or, you know, our practice planning and just create 5 more minutes in the evening to reflect and journal, you know, coming back to our core values? Can we swap out music for a podcast on the way to into work that's more on culture or leadership, you know, those types of things, and hearing from other people out there? I think those types of swaps, you know, as far as, you know, whether it's content or, you know, what activity we're doing, those can be hugely beneficial.
No, definitely. And, you know, one switch that I've made with that, I feel like I'm consistently listening and like reading and just like indulging in information and not necessarily writing down how I would apply it. I'm like, oh, like, so one of the things I do is I'll listen to a podcast or I'll listen to a book and I'll screenshot the timestamp. And like, I've got a phone full of like old podcasts that I need to go back to and like actually write down information and going through like, how do I actually use that? Or like, you know, 1,000 different notes on different things and trying to organize it. And that's the part that I struggle with, I guess, of not necessarily taking in new information, but actually like, okay, now how would I apply it? When do I apply it? What's a good system for being able to put this into place? And
can I share a few things with you on that?
Like, yeah, please do. I'd love that.
Yeah. I think some simple ways to, like, if you're consuming content, I think we can get in this consume. And I think that we over consume. I think we need to understand there's different buckets, right? So one is like, is this just helping me to have the right mindset, right? It's just good stories, you know, like there's that type of stuff. And then there's, you know, people like myself that will come on and oftentimes we're out really practical things you might want to implement, but you can be overwhelmed by that. So, you know, one thing on a podcast, I think it's Overcast, but definitely one of the podcast apps allows you to actually timestamp it in there and will also use AI to create the text for you. So you can copy and paste some of your notes. So, do a Google search on that. I don't remember which one. Mm-hmm. I typically now just pull up my Evernote, and I know you're an Evernote guy as well too. So I'll just usually jot a few things down as I'm coming across stuff on a podcast. But same thing with Audible. Like, there's a bookmark clip, and you can clip it there too as well. But I really think every coach should have like one Google Doc. I like Google Docs or Evernotes that you can really like link to, and you can have a, you know, you just constantly be adding new things there to it. But really, when that can just grow and grow and grow, which, you know, I don't know if we'll talk about today, but in my last book, The Culture System, I really talk about, like, you have to have a framework to kind of put these things under, you know, so they're fitting in these right categories. Mm-hmm. So you know how to execute on them, how to stay consistent with them. But trying to create some sort of framework for implementation, whether that's through a 12-month checklist or a repeatable monthly checklist that you use for your culture or for yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, I use the James Clear Habit Journal for the last 7 years of my life, 6 years since he released it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, habit tracking, that's just every month I cycle over, write down new habits that I'm working on. So trying to create some sort of framework or system upon which you can thread things into and also remove things. Like, okay, I'm going to stop doing this. I'm going to put this in here. We're going to stop doing this in the preseason. We're going to instead shift and we're going to do this preseason retreat, right? You know, so it's just coming back to that more like a calendar type framework that makes it more realistic of like, oh, I actually have time for this. And then here's my toolbox for stuff that I need to get on the fly, right? So you just put that into a separate document as well.
No, I like that. And, you know, speaking of James Clear, it blows my mind. My wife and I are both huge James Clear fans, and just seeing how long his Atomic Habits book has been in like the top 5 on any book list in like the last, and I'm like, it's still on like the top 3. It's just crazy how popular that book has been.
Yeah, it is. It's really good book. But I mean, I honestly think for me, the most impactful thing was his journal that came along with that. Mm-hmm. Right. So you just a simple reflection tool, been using it for, like I said, 6-7 years, and hugely beneficial to kind of evaluate yourself each day on, hey, how did I do? How did I show up for people? You know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that. So with that, you know, let's talk a little bit about, you know, just your book. And I would love to be able to hit on some of that. And I told you, you know, it first came out, I went through it and I've been going through it again in the past couple of weeks. And there's a couple of highlights that you know, I do encourage all of the listeners to go out and purchase it. It would be, you know, well worth your money, and I wouldn't have JP on and I wouldn't be plugging it if it wasn't. But I want to start with, you know, one thing that we started this year, and that's the Leadership Council. So talk to us a little bit about, you know, how, if someone wants to get started, and what I did, I'll talk about what I did, and then you could give, you know, me advice or give the listeners advice. But I felt like, after reading your book and after listening to a couple of different people, I didn't want to just rely on our upperclassmen or seniors for leadership. And, you know, we train those guys up, or girls, if you're coaching a girl sport, and then they're, you know, we train them up for a couple of months and then they go and then they graduate and hopefully they leave, you know, they leave a legacy and they do great things, but then you have to do it all over again. And so, this year I decided that I wanted to do, you know, a couple of kids a class. So I opened it up to, you know, whoever wanted to volunteer. We were going to meet Thursday mornings, every Thursday morning, and just, you know, opened it up for anybody who wanted to show up. So there was like, you know, two or three kids in each class, which has been really good. And we've been going through just some different leadership material. And then even, you know, just getting a weekly like pulse on the team has been really good. And I've really enjoyed, and I told the kids this, I've really enjoyed being able to like sit down with them in small groups, because I feel like as a head coach, you don't get to do that as much as I used to. But I love the idea of it. And I know that we've worked through some different issues that have been going on, you know, within the team, or like with certain kids that needing more love or needing some more advice, or like going through different things. And they've been really a catalyst for a lot of that stuff, and community service as well. But I'd love to hear your advice on, you know, coaches who are hearing that and maybe go, okay, you know, I'm interested in that. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think though, I've run every different type of leadership system for captains out there that you can think of, you know, and I got so frustrated by all of them, you know, whether it's players pick, coaches pick, you know, seniors, you know, how many do you go with? And really, I really started to study the research around leadership development and what really worked, mm-hmm. right? And what I found was all the research points that leadership development that works is experiential, right? So you can supplement it with classes, book studies, these types of things, but really at the core of it, you need to put leaders into leadership positions and give them opportunities to lead, mm-hmm. and then you need to provide mentorship for them in that. So that's really at the core of like what we're talking about here. And so what you're doing is, I mean, there's so many different things I could talk about as far as how we get really intentional with this, but we really want the players to select the leader. But to do that, first off, we create a job description that the leaders are part of, or the team is part of, right? So sitting down with your team and just saying, well, what do we need out of a captain? Like, what are we looking for? What are the qualities? What are those behaviors? So that's one part. It's just really a valuable exercise to do with your team, because so often we just throw them in and we'll vote for captains. Well, what does that even mean? What do we want them to do? So what function do we want them to serve here? So there are certain responsibilities, which are meeting weekly with the coach and leading what we call units or pods, you know, so they're usually our leadership council. We don't believe that, you know, most people can effectively lead groups of larger than four. So we try to put them in groups of three or four. Now, a lot of research around that. So they're going to have responsibilities to lead their pods, you know, these units in a way that's, you know, it's serving them, it's supporting them, it's connecting with them, and they actually create commitments within each of those categories to do. Those are responsibilities, but then the description the players create, right, the team creates. And so when you go to vote on it, you actually vote not on who should be captain, but you get guys that nominate themselves or their teammates. And then they take these three qualities that, you know, you've settled on of like competitive, resilient, and accountable, right? And then you rank, say, the eight people that put themselves forward, you top four in order, and you kind of have a little bit of a voting process there. Now, some coaches are like, well, I don't like who my team picked. And it's like, well, it doesn't really matter who you liked or if you didn't like them. The reality is they're an influencer. And if mm-hmm. I have an influencer on my team, they actually have more power and influence probably than I do as a coach. Yep. And so I want them every week, and I'm going to be working with them and hearing what's going on with them. And I want them to bought into the things that I'm trying to do as a coach. And I want to be developing them. And so that's really where you go from there is, you know, then it's all about, you know, weekly meetings, challenging them to connect with their guys in their units, to support guys through their challenges, whether one kid struggles with his grades or one kid struggles to show up on time or one kid struggles with his emotions in a game. It's not all on you anymore. You know, you can ask, you can challenge your leadership council, your captain's council to help with these responsibilities as well as other practical things like chores and tasks around the team. And so, you know, and they're not going to be perfect, but you go in there and it's so much of this comes back to mindset. It's not, okay, I'm putting these people in position. Now I expect them to be perfect in their leadership. That's a big, big problem. It's like, no, I'm expecting them to fail. I'm meeting them with them each week to help them learn through that process, not to shame them, be like, you didn't do what you said you're going to do, or you should have stepped up here. It's like, hey, how did we do last week? What could we do better this week? You know, what are we all working to grow on as leaders? That is a very profoundly different mindset to approach this than just to be like, well, they were selected and now they're to have this mentality, which so many of us get, which is like, I don't have any leaders on my team. It's like, okay, yeah, well, what are we doing to develop them? You know, like this is, it's about it's a leadership development system as much as it is, you know, about empowering them to lead.
No, I really like that. Do you have any ways or really like, what are some of your players' favorite, I don't want to say studies, because I don't know if that's necessarily what you guys do, but your favorite topics of discussion within your captain's council?
Yeah. You know, it's really interesting how I think it has to be more so you would maybe bring in and send them a podcast or an article that they might read or listen to. I'll share with you two things here. One is, one thing I really like to do is find an article. You know, I think we had one from Stephen Covey that we used for years with my clients, but they would give it to their players, the seven qualities of a great leader, I think it was. Okay. And it had a description and they would read it. And then the coach would go in there and say, okay, when you look at these seven qualities of a great leader, which one do you think I, as a coach, as a leader of this team, need to work on the most this year? And that's like, whoa, well, coach is asking for feedback, right? That's a powerful moment. Right. You allow them to go around and share, you know, and then you own that and you say, yeah, well, this is what I was planning to working on. Or maybe I hear you there. I'm going to make some effort there, but like, we really need to go first in this process, right? So you need to come, you need to sit in a circle always as a leadership council. And you need to, it needs to be just as much about your growth as a leader as it is theirs. And so that's one of my favorite ones. And then you can go around and they can share what they want to grow at, right? And so just using some sort of article or, you know, something like that, or even just asking them, hey, what does everyone grow as a leader? And then you going first is one of my favorite activities to do with the leadership council early. Outside of that, we actually really just stick with a very kind of a more generic format or rubric or template for the meetings, which is we want to start the meeting with something positive. So we're going to celebrate each other, talk about what went well the week before, or, you know, gratitude exercise. And then we're going to go into just connecting back to things that came up in the previous week's meeting. And then the next thing we're going to do is we're going to talk about issues that came up. And so I, as a coach, could bring an issue. I might have reminded my captains during the week, hey, check in with your units. Is there any issues that came up? Issues could be the locker room's been messy too much, or guys have been showing up late, or guys are not showing up tired, or this player or that player is upset with their playing time or their role in the team, like that type of thing. So, and it's like, okay, now let's talk about solutions. So it's celebrations or positive things, review from last week. What issues do we have? Let's focus on solutions and then put a place and plan for solutions moving forward.
So I really like that. And, you know, what would you say for, so, cause we have like a similar template that we give them homework for. And it's like, you know, mood of the team or like things like that. It's like, you know, how connected were we this week on a scale of, you know, 1 to 7, some different things like that. But, you know, you've got a couple people who are very well versed in, okay, like these guys are more of your, you know, your vocal leader guys who really like to have input. And then you got a couple who are, you know, who are less inclined to share. And especially because we'll see it here, because we have upperclassmen who, you know, they've been through all of this several different times and they feel like, you know, this is their team. And then you've got freshmen who want to respect the upperclassmen, but are still wanting to provide leadership within their groups or even the whole scope of the team. How do you help the underclassmen with some of that stuff?
Yeah. You know, we love having the underclassmen part of leadership council because they're going to be more safe to speak up and be that voice in the team in the smaller setting. The other thing that we like to do is use the units for breakouts, right? So whether you're having a team meeting or you're doing something before practice or after practice, we like to do a lot of before action reviews, after action reviews, where the players get together in groups of, you know, their units, and they're able to lead, and they're having a voice with three guys, right? Hey guys, what's our focus for today? What's the one thing we got to get better at today? And then afterwards, you know, hey, how do we do on that? Right. So it could be that, or they could be just leading a conversation around, you know, some questions you give them to get to know each other more. Right. So we would mix it up a lot and with some of my clients' teams. So you're really giving them opportunities to lead in small spaces. And really the thing is to, you know, what if we look at the research around leadership within teams and sports teams in particular, like book, like, Captain's Class by Sam Walker goes deeply into this, which is just like the real effective leaders within a team are typically actually the more quiet ones, right? It's in, but they're not quiet in those, they're having more side conversations, one-on-ones, you know, conversations with a couple people, you know, challenging, encouraging, supporting. It's not really the big vocal guys that are, you know, really driving the culture. They're needed, right? And that's why I love the Leadership Council, is you're giving typically a variety of personalities. You got the social guy, you've got the loud guy, you got the energy guy, you got the more quiet, reserved guy that just gets in there and does the work. But you can go in there and play their strengths while also challenging them in a few areas to elevate their leadership.
Oh, that's really good. So another thing that I really enjoyed about of your book was when you talked about the team culture days. And I mean, you've really, you know, like I say this in a loving manner, but I think great coaches are great thieves. And so you talked about, you know, Pete Carroll and Anson Dorrance and John Wooden, and then the, you know, Messiah College, and all of these have just been books that I've just devoured over the last couple of years, because again, it's, we steal from great people. So tell us a little bit about your team culture days and why you recommend doing similar things in everybody's program.
Yeah, I think it's all about creating space away from the field, you know, for the athletes to connect and to, is the first thing, right? So like, if we're going to have relationships that we care about each other and we're working towards a common shared goal, then we have to create opportunities for athletes to connect with each other. So it's about building those relationships. And so this isn't about just going playing paintball with your team, right? Like that we got to do more than that. And it could be being intentional in how we set up our team meal. It could be doing some kind of like a hell week, hell day, kind of like a boot camp type of thing, where we create some shared vulnerability in a very positive, like, I know that can sound like it's a, oh, here we go, negative, running kids in the ground. No, it's very intentional. Let's go do some hard things together. Let's have some shared suffering. Let's work together in a supportive environment, mm-hmm. where we believe in each other. So it's a very intentional in those types of things. So it could be something like that. You know, meals are always great. Shared suffering. One of my favorites is community service. You know, nothing helps players gain more perspective than going to serve mm-hmm. people, coach athletes with maybe special needs or in a disadvantaged community. Their ability to do that helps to reframe perspective. So, you know, there's a lot of, you know, really, you know, cool things you can do with your team outside of, you know, things that even cost money. Like, they don't even need to cost anything. So mm-hmm. trying to find things that are inexpensive, that are helping them gain perspective and to connect and to go out there and serve and just kind of connect it to your values as a program. That's a huge component.
Sure. No, I really like that. So, you know, with that, let's talk a little bit about, you know, baseball wise, because I've always been really intrigued by the idea of, you know, your competitive cauldron. And, you know, I think you stole that from Anson Dorrance, who stole it from, you know, I can't remember who the North
Dean
Carolina
Smith.
Basketball
coach. Yeah.
Dean Smith. That's right. Okay. And so when those guys are talking about something and yourself, I'm going to listen, but I've been having a really hard time with that, because it's like, I want to add competitiveness, but baseball is so different than any other sport, right? I mean, it's like, oh man, I'm just having a really hard time with it. And I've actually tried to collaborate with different people in different parts of the country who've tried to do something similar, and it's not super easy. Unless you're actually like playing a game, we can do different things, but just practice, it's been kind of hard. But I don't know how many baseball coaches do you work with currently from a mentorship standpoint?
Yeah. For a lot of guys, it's the off season right now, but I worked with two last year and then one in softball. So, You know, okay. we've
did they have any ideas on that, or is that something that you guys typically discuss?
Yeah. And I got to put you in touch with one of my guys. He's also does a lot of coaching and mentorship for TOC, and he's a baseball coach and runs an academy. Okay. And so we've, you know, typically when the people have baseball specific questions, I refer them to him. I think actually American football is probably the hardest sport to implement the cauldron in.
Yeah,
very position based, but you know, if you're, you know, it's actually interesting how the cauldron came about for me. One of the people that I learned about it first from was actually a basketball guy named Brian McCormick. I didn't read about Dorrance's until years later, but it actually came about actually very organically for me. I remember I used to be losers run and everything. Right. So, you know, like just, I wanted that competitive environment. And then I felt that was disruptive to practice, took too much time. And eventually you're just like, you found it really difficult to motivate. Like, how do you do that on a day before a game? You don't really want to do it then. Right. So, you know, how do you do, you know, if you really want to up the ante, you know, it's like really like you just would, oh, we're gonna make a really, really big sprint here, you know, and that's fine. It's somewhat effective, but I felt like it was wasting time and it really was more extrinsic motivating. And so we went to like another extrinsic, we went to the carrot. So I started creating this positive system. So if guys demonstrated certain behaviors in practice or won games, they'd win so many points, right? And when they could buy candy bars in our coach's office with all their points they accumulated. And that was fine, but it kind of ran out of steam. And all of a sudden, once again, you're trying to offer more and more carrots, not intrinsically motivating. And I remember watching a college coach practice, and I remember them like having really competitive, but not doing any conditioning. And they're like, oh yeah, like it's like we start with 20 points, you know, for that. And they, if they win games, it goes and knocks off conditioning. And then they'd only condition in the weight room later. So I was like, we moved to that system. And then eventually I was like, you know what? I just want to move away from conditioning all the way to altogether, because I think conditioning, I wanted to train my players that conditioning is good for us. We should want to do it. Right. You know, we play high school athletics, burpees, pushups, sprints are all like this punishment. And then all of a sudden 20 years later, we're, you know, paying somebody hundreds of bucks to do all these things to us in a CrossFit gym. It's like, it doesn't make any sense. No, right. Kidding. So that's where we started tracking winners and losers. And we started creating, you know, we picked usually now it's like seven categories. So you pick like seven categories, seven types of drills, or it could be seven drills, right? It could be like, here's a conditioner. So if I was a baseball coach, I would look at like, I want one, at least one conditioning drill that we can make competitive, and we could do it amongst the team, right? And you can score winners and losers different ways. In that, you could have, let's say you got 20 guys on a team, you know, whoever comes first place goes 19-0. They get 19 wins or losses, and then second place is 18-1, right? Would be for that day, right? The other one is we lean more towards a lot more of a ladder system. So you're just constantly competing in groups of two or three or four against those guys, and, you know, getting wins and losses. But we record that in a spreadsheet, and we do the same thing. So it's just like finding six other drills in your sports outside of the conditioning. It could be a hitting drill, it could be a, you know, catching drill, whatever. Just that you think are some pretty strong standards that you want to be competitive in, and using those and tracking the winners and losers within that. And then it kind of tallies up. So players know where they stand. And how you implement, how you roll that out to the team and communicate that is very nuanced depending on the environment, the age, the gender. You know, with a female sports team, you're probably a little less public. You really don't need to talk a lot about it. You just do it, and, you know, maybe you post it, maybe you share it in a group chat, maybe you just hold it for one-on-one conversations when a player is not playing. You're like, well, you're not competing in practice, right? So your numbers are low. Right. So how you roll that out is different. But I would say for baseball, it's finding seven drills or seven types of categories or three types of categories of drills that you would do that you could kind of rotate around.
Well, my first thought was seven is very doable, because I was just thinking about trying to make everything. And I think seven is, like I said, seven. I mean, you do one a day and you've got one every day of the week, pretty much. That's good.
Yeah. And I mean, typically I would, like for me in a basketball situation, I would have some sort of small sided game, right? So some sort of involves decision making. I might have a skill drill. I might have a conditioner. I might have a shooting drill. So like, I think it's just trying to figure out, you know, obviously within baseball, like what are the skills that we want to see our players be really competent on? Like, you know, we want our players to be in shape. Okay, what's a good conditioning thing that would represent that, you know? And so just finding those things. And I mean, I designed my practices where over 50% was charted. over 50%. Mm-hmm. We would also differentiate between learning zone and performance zone. So we might be doing a drill, say, for 10, 15 minutes, but we might, or a game, small sided game, but we might say, hey, we're just learning zone right now. We're not keeping score because I want you out there. I want you failing. I want you testing your limits, right? And then he said, all right, I think we got it. I think we're ready to go. Let's compete. Let's perform. And so now it's like, okay, we're keeping score. And if we play for 5 minutes, we will actually try to create constraints around the game where you might get multiple winners in a 5 to 10 minute period, right? So you have multiple small games, like games to 3 points or whatever, that type of thing. So just we're accumulating more and more data.
No, that's really good. And like I said, one of the things that I feel like with tracking too is I fell into this of like, I was trying to do too much and then it like wore me down. Like I spent more time tracking than actually coaching. And I don't want our listeners to fall into that trap too, because I've been there and it sucks. I felt like more of a statistician than I did an actual coach. And so this year we've got like 5 or 6 random managers that I'm going to train up to be able to do some of that stuff. And then, like you said, just simplify it in a way that they know the outcome. And then it's, I don't want to say easily trackable, but it's doable for you as a coach too. Cause if you're, you know, we have coaches listening that they're the only coach on the staff and, you know, this would be really tough for them to do, but finding ways to make things more competitive. I mean, it's just like this the other day so we're inside, it's really cold and we're teaching our kids how to play wall ball. And like, I know this is a staple for most of people my age and up, but a lot of our kids don't know really that if they have a tennis ball and a wall, then they can get better at being an infielder, an outfielder, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to teach them the technique. And then we're like, okay, like we're going to time you 20 seconds, the most amount wins. And one of the assistants is a new coach. And so he sets the timer and he goes, wow, that was so much more impactful and intentful. And I'm like, all you have to do is add a time or add a number and then they continue to do that. And so that was really good. And just especially this time of year too, I mean, we're going to get into cold. And I mean, there are some days, JP, I'll be honest with you, there are some days that I contemplate my future as a baseball coach whenever basketball coaches have it, you know, 68 degrees every single day that they want to. And I'm outside like freezing my butt off trying to play catch with these guys. So like there's some days I ask the basketball coach, I'm like, man, it's 72 in here right now. It's beautiful. And he goes, well, I will say it does get old when everybody on earth wants to rent the gym. And then we have to schedule everything around that. I was like, oh, okay, that's probably fair.
So. Just to coach basketball in Ireland, they don't like have turn the heating on the gyms here. So it's like, not 68 degrees. awesome. You know, a couple tricks just on the just to help you maybe there on your recording. I actually did a stint where in COVID where I was coaching a pro team here in Ireland. And, due to the limited number of bodies we could have in a gym, I didn't have an assistant coach with me. So there's two tricks. This is I would just design the practice plan where I knew matchups, I knew the numbers. And so as games would get reported, we'd circle in and I would just say real quick in like 30 seconds, I'd say how many wins you get. And I would just make a check mark next to there or like a dash mark. Right. So, and then we were able to take that and I'd screenshot that and then send that to one of my virtual assistants. They'd upload it right to the spreadsheet. Right. So very like not disruptive at all to the practice. The other way I've seen this coaches that have like dry erase boards or large clip charts will have the players run over and just like, hey, you get a win, you go down there and put it down, you know? And then you're marking losses, you know, there's ways to easily tally that up. I got like a whole online course on it too, that kind of walks people through it and spreadsheet that just really streamlines it. So if people want to check that out, that might be worthwhile.
For sure. And they can find that on your website.
Yeah. TOCculture.com. And there's an online courses tab up there at the top.
Awesome. Well, cool. Well, I've got a couple more questions for you. And then I guess we may spend some time on this one, but parents, right? Like I know how much of your mentoring experience is dealing with making sure parent experience is good and dealing with disgruntled parents?
Yeah. You know, I think we probably, you know, years ago we're downstream a lot with this. And so a lot of with my clients was spent like putting out fires, dealing with difficult conversations. But now with most of my clients, we have so much stuff that we put in upstream and we got so much buy-in that we just really don't have much parent issues, you know, that come up anymore. And then when we do, we have a very clear kind of tools on how we engage with that, you know? And so like early on from the very beginning, we do a couple things that are really important. first off, is just comes back to mindset. The coach is seeing the parent as a person, right? Not just as a problem. And by seeing them as a person, that's highly influential, in the most influential person in their athletes' lives. We seek to engage them and to work with them, to partner with them. So what does that look like? Well, two big things early on to establish that partnership. One is we actually want to have one-on-ones with them, or really a parent athlete coach conference, where we sit down and we hear what's important to them, what they want their experience to be like. And we can also share observations, but we're just kind of building that partnership and that relationship. And then the other big thing is what we try to craft some sort of parent experience event early on in the year. Typically, you know, you might have the parent meeting. Well, we might include that parent meeting in this parent experience event, but the parent experience event was more like, hey, come out here and you're going to practice with the team, you know, get the parents out there. It's really a lot of fun. You know, share a meal together, play, do a team building activity. Like if there are certain team building activities you love to do with your team, just have them do it with the parents as well. So, but you really are intentional in the grouping so that you take parents and you split them up. You get them not just with their son or daughter, but you get them with other kids and other parents. And so they start to build relationships and connections. We'll even co-create parent standards. We'll ask the parents, we'll have the athletes communicate to the parents in that experience event. Hey, this is what we need from our coaches, and this is what we need from our parents for us to be successful as athletes. So they communicate that to that, and the parents sit down and they work together and create parent standards for the team. Like, this is how we're going to show up for our kids and for each other so that we have a fun experience as parents. So that initial thing, you build these relationships though, and all of a sudden it's like, well, it's not just about my son or my daughter, because I know these other kids and I like these other kids. And I know these other kids' parents and I have a relationship with them. And so you start to really start to build those connections right from the get-go, as well as that relationship with them, where you're like, hey, I'm here to support you and what's important for your son or daughter. And that can be really, you know, that's about laying the foundation. That's really important.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. And you sent over a couple different notes that I really want to dig into more. You talk about that, and then, the conversations that we want to have with parents. What did you mean with that?
Yeah, typically we say, no, 24-hour rule, and I won't talk about, playing time or another kid. That's fine. You got to set boundaries. Absolutely. But we also need to engage parents with, well, what do we want to hear from them about and why? You know, and so for me, everyone should have their own list. But for me, it's like, hey, I want to know when something's going on with your son or your daughter, mm-hmm. like something is going on, like they're not enjoying their experience. They're showing up. It's one day. It's okay. Don't call me this the first time that they're miserable after practice, but like when they're consistently unhappy and thinking about quitting, and they're not, and they refuse to come talk to me as the coach about it, then please reach out to me and let me know what's going on. If something's going on in the family, I've had kids where, their father was thrown into jail, or the parents were going through a divorce, and I find about it later, and I really wasn't as like empathetic to maybe some of their struggles. I was just caught up into their behaviors, oh, well, they're not late, or they seem disengaged. I guess they're not bought in. It was actually like, no, they're just going through hell right now and mm-hmm. life is really hard for them. So those types of things, I really encourage parents, to come talk to me if there's something I do that goes against what I've said I value. So essentially, if you've changed your opinion of me as a person and you're like, oh, he doesn't care about my son at all. Like, whoa, mm-hmm. like I'd love to get clear about what happened. I'd love to get feedback, but also like there's been instances where I've gone like months and months, and finally a parent comes and says something. It's like, well, you said this, or you did this, or I heard you said this. I'm like, that's not what happened at all. And I explain it. They're like, oh, I wish I'd known that. It's like, well, I wish we had had this conversation 3 months ago, so you weren't sitting there just like stewing in this anger towards me. Right. So, I think that's the big thing too, is I just like, I'm very quick, and my clients, we have a very, very clear communication around playing time and how we do that and how we support kids in their role. And you're not going to always agree with my decisions, and I'm not going to be perfect in my decisions around who plays and who doesn't and where they are in the rotation. But and so that's okay if you don't agree with me, but if you don't understand and your son or daughter is refusing to come talk to me and it's becoming a real point of contention, I'm even open to having that conversation. Now, I know that's not going to be for all coaches, but like, I just don't want the parent in the stands bad mouthing me or other kids or going to the AD. I want them coming to me, right? I want to address those issues before they grow.
Sure. Yeah, I like that. So what are some different ways that you can create like powerful moments and for for parents and their kids together. Cause a friend of mine did this one, and I'll share this one and I'd love to hear your thoughts too. But he did a picture day where their parents got to come take pictures with their kids. So, you know, here we typically do like your individual pictures and then your team pictures. And he wanted to include the parents in any of these too. And I thought that that was a really cool way to include them, that they're already going to be here dropping off their kids mostly anyways. And some of them took them off on the offer and some of them didn't, but I thought that that was a really cool way to include them as well. But what are some different ways that, that you've been able to help parents feel like they have ownership? Well, I don't know if ownership is the right word, but they've got a stakehood in the program. Like they feel like they're a part of it rather than, you know, the only way that they're a part of it is if their son or daughter plays. Does that make sense?
Yeah. They feel more than just a spectator. And so often I think parents feel like a spectator, right? Yeah. So how do we move them from spectator to participant and partner?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a couple of really cool ones. I mean, we've had different ones. We do the photos for a lot of our clients, do that with the parent experience event. And we do that Division I level.
Oh,
like
cool.
I've got clients at Division I level that bring parents in. They do the parent practice, mm-hmm. then they do a social and the parents get photos together with, you know, it's a great event. But in season, some of my favorites are really, here's a couple really simple ones. One is, post game locker room talk. So mm-hmm. I'll give you two stories here. We had a coach that a client of mine that won their, they won the conference last year and they got security to go out there and invite all the parents and they kind of knew where they were sitting into the locker room and the parents came down and got to be a part of this really powerful moment in the locker room and hear the message the coach was delivering. You know, and those parents, that coach got flooded with texts over the next few months. Just thank you for that opportunity to be there and to celebrate and just to kind of hear and see that what was going on, the emotion in that big win. And in the same week, I had another coach that they lost a big, really devastating game. But I challenged him. I said, hey, win or lose to this in this championship game, invite the parents in. And he did that. He walked up in the stands. He was a high school coach. And he said, hey, come to the locker room after this big loss. And the kids are, you know, in tears or disappointed in a great season. But, you know, the coach just gave a message of how proud he was of their effort and their attitude. And sometimes that message that these coaches deliver is probably just as important for the parents to hear, right? You know, around team and growth and connection. Well, then he also just turned around to some parents and said, hey, does anybody else want to say anything? And some parents spoke in and just reinforced that message. So it was a really powerful moment for the parents to be a part of that, for the kids to be a part of that, and really, really special. We try to do other things like different, you know, events. Like there's the parent appreciation night where every athlete interviews their parent and has some questions to learn more about them and the challenges of being a parent and the great parts about being a parent. And then they create a little bio of their parent and the parents are honored at the halftime or in between innings in a baseball game. You could do it that way too, where just the parents come out and the bio is read and it's just a really, and they deliver maybe like write a note or a letter to the card to their parents, you know, different things like that. We try to create a night where we just honor the parents, you know, and the role that they have played in the athletes' lives.
Sure. No, that's really good. You also talk about parent emails. Is that like a weekly email? I actually do one. I do one every Sunday, and I know we've had a couple people reach out. I think most appreciate it. I think I've heard from a couple people, but it definitely helps with pickup times. But with that, like what should we include in this weekly email? And then just give us some advice on people who are wanting to start something like similar to that.
Yeah, typically we have the weekly communication. So just spice it up. First off, let your personality be in there. If you're a funny guy, like be funny in the email, right? You know, don't doesn't have to be all serious, right? You know, let your passion, let your personality come out even in the email. So just spend a little bit of time recapping what happened in the previous week. Giving perspective, not just we lost or we won or we did this, but like not just who was high scores, but more importantly, like how are you as a coach and how are you trying to help the players to see, right? If you've been on a winning streak, how do you, you know, we're trying to stay focused on just continuing to get better. If you're in a losing streak, what are we trying to learn and grow through this losing, you know? So just share the perspective that you're actually now working on in the next week. So highlighting, hey, what are the character skills we're working on? What are the leadership skills? What do we got going on culturally? You know, we got a team activity, we got a team meeting. What are you going to do in the team activity or that team meeting? What's the purpose of that? So just kind of sharing what's going on culturally with the team. I like to give a bit of a highlight of the week ahead. You know, hey, we got this opponent. Yeah, they're 2-5, but they just got back their best player. So, you know, this is going to be a tough one, or they played a really heavy schedule. So this isn't going to be a walk in the park. So you're kind of grounding expectations around some competition, okay. honoring, you know, if you got core values in your program, a lot of our coaches have like a, you know, some core value awards of the week. Right. So who was the toughest guy of the week, you know, who was the most selfless guy of the week, and just honoring them in that email. And also what do they do that, you know, pointing out the behaviors. So that type of thing can be really valuable. Just don't just have it be a schedule, right? Do something to make it actually where parents want to read it. And that reinforces the values and the messaging you want around your culture.
No, I love that. And so I know we're getting into, you know, talking about the good with the parents. And I think, you know, inevitably there's going to be one, like there's going to be one that you have to have a hard conversation with. And, you know, it just seems like every year, like that's just something that comes with the territory. I expect that to happen. So I'm not ever surprised, but at the same time, it's always disappointing when it does. But I feel like it happens at least once a year. But with that, like what you mentioned in this one, you said three steps to engage in hard conversations with parents. What's your advice on that?
Yeah. The first thing is little Ted Lasso, be curious, not judgmental, come in with curious and ask questions. So just taking the time to just say, hey, you know, if a parent is going, they have an issue, or maybe you even initiate the conversation. I think we need to do that more often. Like there's certain parent behaviors in the stands, or we see the way that it's going on with their son, is just to say, hey, I'm observing this, or I'm noticing this at the games, or I'm noticing this in your son. I could be wrong, but I think, you know, that might have this type of impact, right? So it could be sharing our observations, but asking questions and being curious in that. Or it's just if they call me and be like, hey, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. And really actively listen, not be defensive, but be curious. Like you need to be learning about them, their perspective, and then share that back. Okay, so what I'm hearing is this. So that's really great listening. So it starts with listening with curiosity and asking questions. The second thing is to share your perspective and your observations. Or, you know, or your assessments and your observations. So my observations are facts. This is what I know. Johnny's been showing up late, or, you know, I saw this, or I know this. I might have heard this from other people, right? So I'm sharing the facts of what I've heard as facts, but then I'm also separating facts from assessments. You know, so Johnny shows up late here. It seems like, or I could be wrong, but this is what I'm seeing, or this is what I'm thinking, or this is the story I'm telling myself here. So sharing the assessment as an assessment and holding it lightly, right? Don't hold on to it tightly so that they can dispute it and can challenge it, right? If they need to, right? But just being able to do that puts people less defensive and more open to your feedback. And then, you know, you have that conversation there. And the last piece is to partner for support. So if it's around playing time or roles or, you know, some sort of discipline, it's like, okay, well, here's the thing, your child's role is not going to play because we had this conversation today. So they're whatever in the lineup, or, you know, this is discipline, you know, they've been held out of a game because of certain behavior or whatever. Like that's not going to change today. But what can we do to support your son or your daughter in that role? And so now we're just coming back to this as a partnership is, okay, I'm standing my ground, but also what can I do? What can we do as a staff? What can you do as parents to support them in this role or through this discipline moment, this consequence? So just listen with curiosity, share your perspective as well as your observations. And then lastly, partner for some support and agree upon what can we do moving forward?
Well, and you mentioned the 24-hour rule earlier. I don't know if that's yours or I know we use that here too. I think that's, you know, a safe and fair rule, but what are some ways that you try and enforce those boundaries with parents? Like there's got to be, like, we're not, you know, I just say there needs to be boundaries that's good for both sides and for the player, because you don't want parents sitting in the dugout or next to the bench, like talking to them the entire time. But what are some different ways like you have had to, or your advice on enforcing those boundaries with parents?
Yeah, I mean, 24-hour rule is just as good for us as coaches so that we're not emotional after a tough loss, right? So those are good things. I think when it comes to enforcing boundaries, you know, we really need to partner with our administration or club directors so that we understand, we're all on the same page of like, hey, this is our process for working with parents that are challenging, right? And that are creating some issues or some pain points for us. This is what we're going to engage with, and this is what we're not going to engage with. Also, working with administration, like, these are the type of behaviors that we'll accept, but these things we won't. And then creating some like clear plans as far as consequences. So I think we don't have enough conversations with our administrations around if someone complains to the athletic director, does the athletic director share with the head coach? You know, do they shield the head coach in that situation? And some people want to be shielded. Some people want the athletic director to, you know, share that with them. So when it comes, how we deal with complaints, I think the big thing too, though, I really want to see more out of coaches, and we need administration backing, is like parent behavior at games. And if it's unacceptable, it's for that the administration could back the coach and they all sit down and have a conversation or share that feedback and say, hey, this is what we're seeing, you know, having a conversation like I just outlined there. But then it's like, okay, if this continues, you know, you're going to lose that opportunity to watch your child, right? Even the point of, no, we don't like to think about this, but there's certain parent behaviors that are so detrimental to the culture of the team. They're toxic. They're creating issues for the child potentially at times, or other children. They're just so culturally toxic. I mean, this isn't every parent. This is few parents, but they are there to the point that you actually have to remove the child from the team. But I think before you do that, you have to communicate to the parent, like, hey, if you continue this, your son or your daughter is going to lose their spot on this team. Right. And that's your choice. You're going to choose to keep doing this. We just can't have that, because we have a duty and a responsibility as administrators and coaches to protect the culture. And if we have a crappy culture because of one or two parents decide they want to be toxic and infect that, and like, you need to protect the culture and the experience for all the other kids. And the amount of times that we see that within teams where you remove one player or one parent and everything starts to flourish, and you're just like, man, like, you know, we're doing all these things in the front end, right? So it's not like you're just implementing these boundaries, right? Are you doing the other things to build partnerships, build relationships, involve the parents, move them from, you know, spectator to actual participant within the culture? Sure. If you're doing those things, you shouldn't really have many, except for people that are really probably, you know, at times like mentally unstable, like having some certain mental illnesses or challenges like that, that are oftentimes, you know, you have to really be really, really careful around. But like I said, we got to protect the culture.
Sure. No doubt. Do you do, I know you've mentioned like player and like entrance meetings, exit meetings, like just really like player, I call them player development meetings, like individual player development meetings. What's the structure that you have with those? And, you know, it's getting to the time of year where some of the players are asking like, hey, where do you see me? And, you know, we usually do it this time of year of just like, hey, we've gotten to see you for 9 weeks here in Oklahoma. So we've gotten to see him for an hour a day, most days, for about 9 weeks. And just, here's where we see you right now. Here's some different things that we need to work on. And some of them it's fairly generic because we haven't played a game or a scrimmage, and we won't for another 4 months, but just giving them some feedback on some different things. So what's your usual advice, probably this time of year or however often you give them? And then really the main topics of discussion probably depend on the time of year, but if there's any coaches that are listening and even myself, what would your advice be on just different individual player development meetings, depending on the time of year and how often should we do them? What should topics be, et cetera?
Yeah. So let me, talk about three things in this regard. I could talk a lot about things, but one would be cadence. Sure. One would be the structure of the conversation, the structure of the player development plans or personal development plans, as we call them. First off, cadence is really dependent upon the coach and their availability and the level. But I've seen coaches with like, I've seen a coach, he's got like four kids, teaches six classes at the high school level, and yet he still has, you know, one-on-ones with every player once every 2 weeks because he has two part-time assistants. So they have 12 players. They just rotate, right? And they rotate around. So, hey, you got these four players. These 2 weeks, that's two players a week, 15 minutes. So they were doing them really consistently, you know, like every 2 weeks in season. So you've got to find your cadence, you know, at the beginning, at least beginning, middle, end of the year. You at least need to do it three times. Sure. Okay. Second thing is, what does the conversation look like? Well, first off, really put them in the driver's seat of their athletic experience, and we should be passengers. Okay. So put them in the driver's seat by, you can use the GROW model, which is what we use in coaching. what are your goals or your aspirations? Grow is goal, reality, options, and way forward or will. So goals, what are your goals or aspirations for your sport, for the season, for the team this year, for life, right? What could be so wide ranging. Reality, where are you? So where do you want to go? Where are you currently? You know, where do you need to grow? What's holding you back? Where are you strong? So that reality, what's your current situation? And then just brainstorm. Okay, what options, what things can you do to close that gap from where you are to where you want to be, who you are to who you want to be as a person and as an athlete? So brainstorm and then say, okay, what are you committed to doing? What will you do moving forward? And what can we do moving forward to support you in that? And you gain a lot of permissions in that last part to like challenge them, encourage them, hold them accountable, mm-hmm. remind them. So you become less of a pest and you're more of a guest because they've invited you into that relationship. You know, and throughout that whole growth thing, you know, they're allowed, they're really driving the conversation. You're just asking questions. And then you're occasionally sharing perspective and say, well, I like that, but here, I think you could do have a bit more of a stretch goal, or hey, here's where I think you're also got some areas for improvement if you want to achieve that or be a starter or whatever like that. So we're peppering those things in within the grow model. So that's typically the conversation that we're kind of just checking back in there. Hey, what's your goals for the next few weeks? Or, you know, so you use that framework typically moving throughout the season. The plan itself would be typically, you know, want their goals at the top, their areas of growth, what they're committed to doing, a section on their role, where do we see them currently within the team, and maybe some agreements for support or accountability moving forward. So that would be the actual plan. We like to typically document those digitally. You don't have to update them a lot moving forward. You know, you might just add a few things, you know, throughout the season. We like to document because we like to share it with the athlete to make sure they understand what they've committed to. We like to share it, especially with parents. And the other thing is, like, if I'm meeting with Johnny, but I'm not meeting with him the next time, well, my assistant coach can now follow up and still do the one-on-one and review the PDP and say, okay, so what did you say you were committed to doing? What were you growing on? We can have a recap in that 15 or 30 minute conversation, and I don't have to be present for everyone. So that's the benefit of documenting. That's typically what we put on that document.
Usually do like a Google Sheet or like Google Form, Google Doc with this stuff.
Yeah. So we would typically have like a Google Sheet to be tracking. And then in the Google Sheet, each player's name would have a hyperlink to another Google Doc that might be their player development plan. Oftentimes to start those conversations, we would send them a Google Form. What are your goals? Where do you see yourself? We want them to be thinking about that beforehand. And then we also speed up the conversation because instead of asking those questions, I've already got the answers. So I'm able to say, hey, so you said this were some of your goals. Tell me a little bit more about that, right? You said you got to run these areas. Okay. Tell me a little bit more about that, right? So that type of thing.
Perfect. Cool. Well, I've got a couple questions, quick hitters before you go. I know I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. You've made me better today. And I JP, I couldn't tell you. I appreciate you more than that. But a few quick hitters, if you got some time before you go, is that okay?
Yeah, man.
Okay, perfect. All right. So JP, what's the latest thing that you've learned that's made you better at your job?
Yeah, absolutely. When you're giving feedback, you need to be learning as well. So when I give feedback, I have to be curious in that, not judgmental. And I need to be saying, hey, this is what I'm seeing. This is what I'm observing. What are you noticing? What's the story you're telling yourself? What do you think of what I just shared with you? How does that resonate? Am I off base there? Right. But I'm asking questions, but I'm sharing feedback and I'm quickly following up with questions to learn. So often I think we think the only person that has something to learn is the person receiving feedback. And if we can start to see ourselves as a learner when we're also giving feedback, that will instantly make us a more curious person. And it'll make us better at giving feedback.
I'm with you. That's really good. Second question is, what is like one thing that you've implemented either in your program or one thing that you consistently implement in other coaches' programs that you feel like has made the biggest impact?
Absolutely. Without a doubt, a logical consequences done in a progressive manner, which are typically moving away from the yelling, screaming, putting the kids in a line, making them run or do conditioning as a consequence or anything like that, and moving away from punishment and moving to consequences of you've lost the opportunity to get better in this drill or you've lost the privilege. It's so there's three types of logical consequences. There's a fix it. There is a kind of like a positive time out. I'm blanking on the third one today, but the big thing here is, what does it look like? Well, if an athlete doesn't go hard or does a rep with a bad attitude or whatever, it's like, do it again. So that's the fix it, right? So do it over, or you reset the drill for the whole team. It's like, hey, we've been doing this for 2 minutes. This is not the standard we've set, guys. We're going to start it all over again. So reset the timer on the clock. The next progression might be, you know, a level two kind of like consequence, which is like what we call it as soon as. So rather than saying, well, if you do that again, you're going to be sitting out. It's like, hey, you seem to be struggling with your effort or your attitude today. I want you to step off. And as soon as you're ready to come in and work as hard as, you know, we know, you know, our standard is here, or have the attitude that I know that, like, you know, we need to have here to be successful. As soon as you're ready, you can come back in. That really puts them in and gives them, emphasizes that choice.
That's good.
As the, another alternative to that, a little harsher, but is, hey, right now you're not working at the level that we need. And our standard, you're not meeting our standard. You know that we got high standards here. So you're going to step off and we'll see you in the next drill, because you've lost the opportunity to get better in this drill. So it can be really, really simple. It's just, hey man, we just had a conversation around this. Effort's not there. Step off. You've lost the opportunity to get better in this drill. We'll see you in the next one. And coaches are like, oh, well, man, like, you're giving them what they want. They didn't want to work hard. It's like, no, man, like, you do this enough consistently, and it will absolutely drastically change their perception. They will not be happy staying on the sideline while all their teammates are working, getting better. And then the last one is just, hey, looks like you're not just feeling it today. We'll see you tomorrow. And that's the old John Wooden one. It's just, you know, you've lost the opportunity to get better today. And you know, that rarely has to happen when you're using the other progressive consequences. So there's kind of like a leveling up, right? And then finally you might get to that point. And 99% of the time when you do that, or coach, a client does that, the player comes around and says, coach, I'm sorry, I screwed up. I'll be better for, and apologizes the team.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. I really like those. And it, you know, yeah, definitely. I like the way that you phrased it, because I'll be honest with you, and I know I'm taking away from your quick hitters here, but if you phrased it as you like, just get out of practice, I'm tired of dealing with you, it's completely different conversation, especially whenever they go home and have the dinner conversation, rather than, you know, hey, you're not bringing it today, go try again tomorrow. Like, I expect more from you. You've given more for us from you. And so that's, I do want to highlight that, because I really like the way that you phrased it. And it's really, you know, coming across from you in the past hour, it's really hard for me to believe that you are a yeller and a screamer on the court, because you're such a thoughtful, self-reflective person. That's crazy to me.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's you know what the thing is, once I actually started to have the tools to be able to do this effectively, it was really easy to stop, because it was so obvious. Like that language, the tone, the semantics, you're emphasizing choice. Mm-hmm. It's just, like you said, it just changes so much about that experience, as well as you've already pre-established what those consequences are. Guys, when we don't meet the standards here, you're going to lose the opportunity to get better. You're going to step out of the drill, and you've communicated to the parents, and then you might even follow up with an email to the parents. Just like, hey, you don't have to do anything, but just so you know, Johnny was set out of practice today because of this. We're dealing with it. Just let you be in the know. So they have like that side of the story, right? But
that's good.
Yeah, it really is a game changer. You know, like so often we try to use cliches like, you know, it's a get to, not a got to. But everything we do makes it feel like you got to do it. You got to practice. But this is a way that you actually train. Hey, it is, you get to come in here and you get better.
All right. I'm with you. Well, I've got one more for you, and then we'll wrap this thing up. This could take probably the entire hour, but what are some of your most recommended books? I know you're well-versed in reading and research. So if you could give our books, or if you could give our listeners a couple of different books to listen to or to read, what would those be?
Yeah.
Besides yours, obviously. I'd love, please plug your book here as well.
Yeah. Well, my book, The Culture System, I think what's really impactful about that one is it gives you a framework to get upstream, and, so you can do it. You can stay consistent. There are proven tools and methods. Absolutely. They're some of the best things, you know, the leadership council, the player development plans, but like, you're probably sitting here going, man, this stuff's awesome. But like, how do I do it? How do I stay consistent? And so this really shows you the way to do it. And a lot of times it's just replacing some of the things you're already currently doing with some of these things. And you're not gonna be able to do it all, but the framework allows you to kind of layer it in. So the framework is really the key component of that. So the culture system is great. And then November 21st, my newest book, The Sports Parent Solution, comes out. And once again, it's just, it's a, like a sequel to this culture system, much shorter, but just, it all plugs right back into the framework of establishing culture, supporting culture, and enforcing culture. So those would be two phenomenal books. I'm really, really big on, I'm going to give you some stuff that your people won't have read before. My favorite is Unlocking Leadership Mind Traps by a lady named Jennifer Garvey Berger, B-E-R-G-E-R. It's a phenomenal book. You won't have heard of it, but it is one of the best books on leadership. It's pretty short, and it's all about how to lead in complexity because, you know, culture and leadership is very complex today. So I highly recommend that one from a leadership standpoint. And, you know, early, I'll just kind of leave you with that one because that one's just it's so rich. And that last thing people need to do is be reading more and more and more and more. Like, I think it's really about finding a few things you can really lock in on content wise. Mm-hmm. And then I think you supplement, you know, what you're learning through more story-based things that are reinforcing kind of the mindset that you want.
Awesome. Well, JP, I appreciate your time. I appreciate, you know, your patience and you giving us really so many practical things on the show today. And I couldn't thank you more than you know, for your time and everything that you've done for us. But I do want to open up the mic and you know, let you talk about, is there anything else that you want to discuss or just talk about before we go, or anything else that you'd like to tell our listeners?
No, I just kind of leave you with this because it's getting about dinner time here in Ireland. So it's just that at the end of the day, you know, I think the culture can feel overwhelming to do it, and it can feel really complex, and it can feel exhausting. And you might be inspired by some of these ideas today, but I just want to encourage coaches, if you can get this right, if you can get upstream, you'll actually save yourself a lot of energy and frustration and time, and you'll find fulfillment in coaching again if you've kind of lost it, or you've lost that spark, or maybe you're just kind of getting a little bit bogged down the weeds. So whatever your experience is, you know, you'll actually save yourself time and energy, and you'll, you know, I've had so many coaches that have adopted this, and they're just like, you know, I had a coach, he's like 30 years in track and field, a college Division I coach, highly successful, thinking about getting out of it. And he's like, now he's like, man, I think I got another 10, 20 years in coaching because of this shift. So, and I think at the end of the day, it's because the power of culture, and the real power in culture is this ability to provide a place where people feel connected. And what we know in the world today is obviously that there's a huge mental health crisis going on. And one of the most healing and powerful things is that sense of community, that sense of connection, a place where you feel seen, you feel known, you feel loved, you feel respected, you feel safe. And so if we can get this right, it's going to be really powerful for our athletes, very healing for them, but also healing for ourselves. You know, they're going to have a great experience. They're going to grow as people. And we're just going to be, yeah, providing something for them that is honestly really lacking in today's society. So my hope is that people are inspired to get the culture right, and to get upstream on this, this culture and thing within their team or wherever it is. It could be your classroom. I mean, that's the coolest thing for me is I made shifts in my culture of my team, and all of a sudden my classroom became like an amazing place for my students, and it applies to your parenting and or your business or whatever you do outside of coaching.
Thank you so much for listening to Ahead of the Curve. If you would do us a huge favor, leave a rating or review wherever you are listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, share it with someone and tag us on social media. That would help us so much with growing the show and helping others to stay ahead of the curve.